BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the programme and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Anne Scott James, Dillis Powell, Dennis Norden, and Frank Muir. We go straight into round one, which tries to test their vocabularies. 2 marks if they get the meaning of these words roughly right. Beginning with Anne Scott James. Anne, the meaning of the word concatenation.
Of circumstances is the only phrase
yes.
I can associate
That's fair
it
enough.
With. It means a linking together.
That's it. Union by linking together in a kind of chain, though it's used figuratively and not literally normally. 2 marks, well done. Frank Miller, what is a portmanteau word?
A portmanteau gives it to you, doesn't it? It's from the French. Port-man-toe. And when port goes to a man's toe, he gets gout. And gout is a portmanteau word for get out. Gout. And it's 2 words or more shoved together.
Frank's right. It's a word made by combining parts of 2 or more different words to express a combined meaning and blending the sounds too.
Lewis Carroll did it.
Slithy, which is a mixture between lithe and slimy, probably, which comes in the Jabberwock in Through the Looking Glass. Chortle was even nicer. Chortle was a mixture between chuckling and snorting. Or outside Lewis Carroll, there's squarson, which is a mixture between a squire and a parson. All right, Dillis Powell. What is an elixir?
Elixir is a drink.
Well, rather rashly, but...
Well, it's a reviving drink. Elixir
really?
Of life.
And what's that do to you?
It makes you young again and brings you back to life and to youth and to beauty and to health and happiness and to Frank.
For how long?
Practically forever.
All right. That's one of the two meanings, and I'll give you 2 marks. Elixir, not elixir of life, which is quite correctly described by Dillis, which is a potion designed to prolong life indefinitely, if anybody wants that. But an elixir by itself, or the elixir, was an alchemist's preparation, the idea being to change base or non-gold metals into gold. It never seemed to work, but they were always trying to get it. Dennis Norden, what is oris?
Oh, it's something to do with oris root. It's the other end of an oris root.
Yes.
An oris root, I know nothing about.
Oh, it's used in making face powder.
Yes, it is.
Hmm.
Do you know what flower it comes from? Or plant?
The oris root, I had a wild guess. I would say it comes from the oris. Plant.
It does.
So would I.
I don't think that Anne knows this.
No,
one.
I would absolutely agree. Comes from the oris.
One and a half. Oris is a kind of iris, and nobody knows why it became oris from being iris. And as you quite rightly said, oris root is a fragrant root, usually 3 species of iris, used in perfumery and in medicine. One and a half. Now, before we begin round two, I give each team a quotation from them to write down, and the 2 women members of this team will, I hope, go on studying those quotations, because at the end of the program, I shall ask them the source of the quotation. Anne Scott James and Dennis Norden, here's yours. Festina lente. Festina lente. And Dillis Powell and Frank Muir, here's yours. The Battle of Waterloo was won in the playing fields of Eton. And then at the end of the program, I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their idea of how these came to be said or written. We go on now to round two, which is about legend and mythology. 2 marks for correct answers. Anne Scott James, who was Uranus or Uranus?
Oh, he came very early on, didn't he?
Terribly.
I think he was the heaven, and he was born around the time that Chaos was born.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or he was the son of Chaos, possibly.
Yes.
Pre the Olympic, the gods of Olympus.
That's right.
Anyway.
The main thing, which is absolutely right too. In Greek mythology, it was the same as heaven, and he was both son and husband, which must have been a bit complicated, of Gea or Gea, the earth, and father of the Titans, and one of whom was Kronos, and he was rather a curious father. He didn't want his children to see the light at all, and so he hid them in the depths of the earth. And his wife, Gea, didn't like that at all, and so incited the son, Kronos, to emasculate him, and that was roughly the end of the story. Now, Frank Miller, what was the Lernaean Hydra? Lernaean Hydra.
I don't know about the Lernaean one, but Hydra, the Hydra-headed...
Yes.
They had... if you chopped their head off, another couple grew.
That's it.
So they foiled the attacker, hence Hydra foil. And my delicious partner also adds that they lived in a swamp.
Yes. Do you remember who the attacker was?
Ah. What? Heracles?
I think so.
Heracles!
Eldo, all right, two marks. The Lernaean Hydra was a water snake, a monstrous water snake, which ravaged the country around this swamp of Lerna, which you can find there now. It's just near Argos and opposite Nevplion. And it had nine heads, and the middle one, which was cheating, was immortal and couldn't be killed. And it was one of the labors of Hercules to do away with the Hydra. And he kept on striking off the heads, and as Frank quite rightly said, every time he did, two grew in their place. And so he got some help from his servant, Iolaus, and managed to cauterize the wound every time he cut the head off, and that stopped the new ones growing. But the immortal one he couldn't do much with except just put it under a rock and hide it there forever. Now, Dillisbell, who was Hebe? H-E-B-E. Hebe.
Hebe was the cupbearer of the gods.
And goddess of?
Youth.
Mm. Two marks it is. Hebe was the goddess of eternal youth, daughter of Zeus and Hera. She was cupbearer to the gods. She had the power of rejuvenating you, if that was what you wanted. And eventually, small world in those days, she married Hercules when he became a god. Dennis Norden, who was Keir? K-E-R.
This was Greek?
Greek.
You sure? I
change a Greek word.
No, I think it was a member of the Scottish National Tourist Board on stationed on Mount Olympus to encourage travel.
Yes, you're getting very close.
And was changed into a sporran.
When by you cut it off.
By Heracles.
Yes, yes. Mac Heracles.
And every time you cut the sporran off, three sporrans grew in its place.
But how did Heracles beat that one?
And they took the poisoned bile, and it's known as porridge.
7 marks, please.
Half a mark for sheer invention. Kerr was the Greek goddess of death, particularly violent death in battle. And when you get accounts of battles in Homer, you had several of them around, clad in blood-stained garments and dragging the dead and the wounded off the field of battle. Now a round of verse and poetry, and in this round I give each member of each team a quotation and ask them to complete it with the next line or two. 2 marks if they can finish off the quotation, and 2 more for correctly naming the source. Anne Scott James, the curfew tolls the knell of parting day, the lowing herd winds slowly o'er the lee.
Well, methinks it is Gray's elegy.
Yes.
The ploughman homeward plods his weary way and leaves the world to darkness and to me.
Absolutely right. You get your 4 marks.
Cha-cha-cha.
I don't think it was the most not the most difficult one in the world, I didn't think. Thomas Gray's elegy written in a country churchyard. The curfew tolls the knell of parting day. The lowing herd winds slowly o'er the lee. The ploughman homeward plods his weary way and leaves the world to darkness and to me. Now, Frank Muir. When Britain first, at heaven's command, arose from out the azure main...
Arose from out the azure main. Last night at the ponds, isn't it? You can see her standing there with the loo rolls flying through
this
the air.
This was the something of the...
3.5 for harmony.
Rule Britannia...
Oh, no, I think 2.5. You haven't given me the author yet.
The author?
No, I don't. It's a very surprising person.
Yes, it is.
Thompson.
It's Thompson.
Yes.
Seasons.
Yes,
Thompson,
well done.
Isn't it?
Thompson it is.
It's 3.5. Seasons Thompson.
Rule Britannia James. By James Thompson, the elder, because there was another one who wrote about 100 years later or nearly. When Britain first, at heaven's command, arose from out the azure main, this was the charter of the land, and guardian angels sung this strain. Rule the waves. Not the second Britannia, that only comes into the singing. Britons never will be slaves. Three and a half. Dillisbar. Quit, quit for shame. This will not move. This cannot take her. If of herself she will not love, nothing
will
can make
her. I knew that much. Why'd you give me the bit I knew? What about that? I've got to go on, haven't
Yes,
I?
It's nothing can make her, and it's quite an easy
The
line.
Devil take her.
That's right. You finished it all. Now, do you remember the author?
No, I don't.
Two and a half. Sir John Suckling.
Ah.
Song from Aglaura. Two and a half. Dennis Norden. Fear no more the lightning flash, nor the all-dreaded thunder stone. Fear not slander, censure rash. Thou hast finished joy and moan.
Well, I don't know whether it's this verse, but one of the verses ends, golden lads and girls all must as chimney sweepers
quite
come
right.
to dust.
Yes. It's not the same verse, but that's
the... That's the end. That's the one of the verses.
Yep.
Like it starts, fear no more the heat of the sun, nor the furious winter's rage.
That's it.
Jizz.
Author and player.
With Shakespeare.
Remember the player?
It's a song towards the end of Cymbeline.
Quite right.
Oh, marvellous.
Well done.
We had it. We had it on the floor. We
had it.
2 weeks.
Next 2 lines are a bit difficult. 3 out of 4, I think.
We're putting him in for a scholarship.
Shakespeare, the song from Cymbeline, sung by Guiderius and Arviragus over the supposed death. Fear no more the lightning flash, nor the all-dreaded thunderstone. Fear not slander, censure rash. Thou hast finished joy and moan. All lovers young, all lovers must consign to thee and come to dust.
Terribly like Houseman.
It is very like Houseman, indeed. And you've got the two nicest lines about the golden lads and girls. Well, now a quickie round of initials or abbreviations. 2 marks, if you can tell me what the following represent. Anne Scott James, F.D.
It's not the legendary Palmer's daughter.
The one on the penny, Fidei
Defensor. Yes, Defender of the Faith, yes.
2 marks. Fidei Defensor, which Defender of the Faith, which, oddly enough, because the Roman Catholics don't agree with this, was first assumed as a title by Henry VIII, who broke away from the Church of Rome. Frank Muir, S.I.
S.I.?
Hmm.
Special investigator.
I'll give you a slight help. KCSI.
Knight Commander.
Yes.
Of the... Of the Star of India.
Absolutely right, yes. It was the Order of the Star of India, which is lapsed now that we don't run India.
I thought it was a pub.
It only exists in that form in that case, Dennis. Anyway, Order of the Star of India. Lillis Powell. A-V, capital letters. A-V.
A-V? Army?
No.
No? Association? No. No?
To be contrasted with R-V.
Authorised version.
That's it.
Ah.
1.5 marks, they gave quite a lot of help. A-V is the authorised version of the Bible, as opposed to the R-V, which is the revised version. Dennis Norden, R.I.
Rhode Island.
Yes, it'll do.
Yeah.
It's quite a lot of things. Rhode Island, Royal Institute of Painters and Watercolours, religious instruction in schools, and Rex et Imperator, which you used to have on some of the coins when the king or queen was emperor of India. Well, now we come to the last round and go back to those 2 quotations I gave the teams earlier in the programme. 2 marks, Anne Scott James. Can you give me the origin of your quotation, Festina Lenti?
Well, it means hurry slowly and was presumably said by a Roman.
Yes, it was.
But whether it's a poet or a historian, I do not know.
Historian it is.
Well, that
chap with a very odd name.
Very what?
Very odd name. It sounds like it's to do with puddings.
That means it can't be Livy Pudding Suetonius.
I helped a bit. 1.5. Suetonius, Roman historian, in a book called Divus Augustus, the Augustus the Emperor Divine, And festina lenti means make haste slowly.
Could have been Ovis. Ovis moved.
Yes, he's always a good bet, but not this time. Dennis Powell, like the origin of your quotation, please. The Battle of Waterloo was won in the playing fields of Eton.
Well, it was somebody who was alive after 1815.
That's fair.
Wellington?
Yes. Yes.
What was Wellington?
Well, it probably wasn't, but never
could
mind.
Could have been Wellington.
That's good. It's attributed.
For marking purposes, it was Wellington.
The saying the Battle of Waterloo was won in the playing fields of Eton has always been attributed to the first Duke of Wellington who won the battle, but a later Duke, who no doubt also had been at Eton, said this was quite untrue. But it was quoted by a Frenchman, Montalembert, in a book he wrote about the political future of the English. So you get your 2 marks, although it's probably wrong. Well, now I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their explanations of how these quotations came into being, and on this occasion the marks will go to whichever unlikely explanation receives the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So back to Dennis Norden with his quotation, Festina Lenti.
It really is a darn shame about Suetonius. you notice the kind of disparaging way in which Jack spoke of him. This was Suetonius's fate all his life. As in first place, he's only remembered because this ridiculous phrase, festina lente, make haste slowly, is attributed to him. And it is an absurd phrase, make haste slowly. It's absolutely nonsense, because it's like saying drink in moderation, you know. But all his life, you see, Suetonius had a bad time. In the first place, as Jack said, being born with this name. You know, at that time when all the other Romans had these wonderful, romantic, sort of executive-sounding names like Brutus and Julius and Marcus Aurelius, there he was, Suetonius. You know, he used to wish, he used to think to himself, if I had to have a soppy-sounding Roman name, why couldn't it have been something with a bit of an edge to it, you know, like Lascivious, you know, or Infamous, you know, even Miscellaneous. You know. But Suetonius, you know, obviously with a name like that, he had no chance at all of ever getting anywhere in Roman life. And so, of course, obviously from the start he was warped, introverted and shy and didn't even try to do anything and spent all his time simply hanging round the public baths. Now, make no mistake about this, the public baths in Roman days were nothing like the public baths today that we have. The Roman public baths were absolutely splendiferous, which was another name Suetonius used to be quite dramatic, called splendiferous, you know. And they were all marbled, and they had these slaves who would dry your back and squeeze out your loofah, you know. And, of course, a great thing was, of course, that men and women used to bath together because, you know, the Roman democratic principle was founded on the theory that if there are differences, they should be aired. So, of course, it was no hardship hanging around that type of public bath, but Suetonius, being so shy, didn't actually bath at all. He just used to sort of sit at the side and read a parchment or something, which isn't easy in a very busy public bath because the hot steam makes it go all soggy. And one day he was sitting there reading, thinking, I wouldn't even mind being called Erroneous, you know. And suddenly he noticed these two young girls come out of the public bath. And one of them came up to him and said, is this slab vacant? And he says, please do. And she sat down and she said, I see you here a lot. She said, aren't you the chap who's always reading the soggy parchment? And he said, yes. And she said, don't you ever go in the bath? And he said, well, no, I don't. And she said, why not? He said, well, I don't really like to. And she said, well, that's ridiculous. He thought, ridiculous? No, I'm a Suetonius. She said, There is nothing to be ashamed of in nakedness. The human body is the noblest work of nature. And he said, well, it's not actually my body I'm ashamed of. He said, it's my vest. You see, this is another thing you have to know about Roman life. In those days, the washing of clothes was deemed a woman's job. So unless a man had a wife or a girlfriend, he never actually got his smalls done at all, you see. So as in Suetonius's case, his vest was apt to look a bit crummy, you know, especially after about 7 or 8 years. And this girl said to him, it is a shame, isn't it? She said, a chap like you should be able to have somewhere where he could get his vest washed. And that was where Suetonius had the idea for which he should be remembered instead of for this ridiculous line. He conceived the idea of a laundry. Why not get together a group of high-minded young ladies who would wash the vests of those unattached bachelors who had nobody else to do it for them in return for a couple of solidarii or denarii or whatever, you see. And so he got together these girls to do it, and they were known as the Vestal Virgins. And so established his fortune. Now, don't you think that he should be remembered for that rather than for this ridiculous, nonsensical festina lente? He should be remembered for being the first man to say something of very much more use, which is vest in a laundry.
There's going to be some hasty re-scribbling by Roman historians after that one. And now we go back to Frank Muir, and if you remember, his quotation was the Battle of Waterloo was won on the playing fields of Eton.
Everything about the story I'm going to tell you is absolutely true. It was the time when my wife and I had a boat in which we used to travel on the canals and rivers of England. And I can't keep on saying my wife, and I'll tell you her name. She had a very curious name for a girl. Mrs. Muir. I used to call her Polly for short. And Polly and I were on a holiday on our boat, and we'd gone upstream. We were very late, and darkness had set in, and we stopped just short of Windsor, just in fact by the playing fields of Eton. And we tied up, very late, we tied up right underneath an overhanging ledge of earth and grass. And we tied up and bedded down for the night. Now, my wife was very tired because pulling a canal boat is, you know, isn't easy. Not only that, and the loop and the rope had chafed her neck, and she she had to pull it because steering is a question of decisions all the time, you know, whether to push the thing to the right or the left, and it's much better that I cope with that sort of thing. And so she was very tired, and she turned in first and went to sleep almost immediately, and we had a double bunk. And I went to sleep, but I was woken, and I awoke humming. It's a very unusual thing to do, you know. But I awoke humming, plunk, 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 plunk. Plunk, plunk. I woke humming that, and I had a slightly painful nose, and a cold nose. And after a while, I realized that the boat was leaking slightly, and the water was dripping upon my nose to the rhythm of plunk, 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 plunk. After a while, I realized what it was that had been dripping through. It was water. And I thought that it was water, and that we were here underneath the playing fields of Eton. And it was water which had come from those fields, which had been, had been trodden on by the aristocracy of England. To think that the very water which was about to drip through our roof had probably wetted the jerseys of our rulers. And I rushed and got an empty beer bottle out of the bilges. And by judicious use of the boat hook, I rolled my wife out of the bed and onto the floor. It's quite a drop, but she's a heavy sleeper, as I say. And I tore the mattress off, balanced this empty beer bottle beneath the drip, and collected this water. And in the morning, I put the cork in and I saved it. And you know, it now has a place of honour in my lovely home. I've made a sort of shrine for it just above the television set. And there it sits. And one day, you know, some famous person might be Lady Lewisham, or it might be Lou Grade. But they're going to come and they're going to say, what a lovely home you have. And after that, they'll say, what is that beer bottle of dirty water doing in that obviously honoured position? And I will look at them and I will say with pride, thinking of its aristocratic connections, I will say, the bottle of Waterloo was rain in the playing fields of Eton.
Well, no wonder the public schools are in danger. Well, by your vote, Dennis Norden just wins the contest of the two stories, and this brings us to a final score in which he and Anne Scott James win by 1.5 marks from Frank Muir and Dillis Powell, and it also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason, and presented by the BBC.